Thelma Adams is an established figure in the entertainment industry, a dear friend to this program. For two decades or more, she has penned celebrity features and film criticism for high-profile publications, including Variety. She reviews films for AARP.com. She joins us to discuss this morning the 2021 Academy Awards, such as they are. They will take place this Sunday. It's taking place much later than it normally does, but I don't care because it gives me an opportunity to talk to our very own resident Oscarologist, Thelma Adams. Good morning, Thelma. How are you?
Good morning. I am fine because my yard is full of daffodils. The sun is shining for this moment between snowstorms.
Well, right. So here we are. And
here we are.
It's been such a weird year. Now, we knew pretty early in the game that this year's Academy Awards would be later, number one, than they normally are, usually in February, now in late April. And number two, that a lot of the films that were nominated took a very circuitous route to people seeing them because most people couldn't get to a movie theater to see them. So let's start there about what impact that has on the 2021 Academy Awards.
It's huge. And I would like to say, even if I'm an Oscarologist and an expert, I think I can pretty much encapsulate this year in two words. We'll see. my husband's favorite phrase, we'll see. We really don't know. I want to ask you one question. Have you been to the movies yet this year?
No.
Okay. Because that's part of this whole change, is that I went to my local to see Nobody, the movie.
Yep.
My local is the Roosevelt in Hyde Park. And it was such an odd experience now to go to the movies, as lovely as it is. So really, we don't yet know what's going to happen with movies.
Well,
and
No, two things. One is that I know you and I usually talk about this every year, but I set this stupid goal for myself every year where I'm going to see every film nominated in every category. So this usually has me seeing 100 films or whatever, and I love doing
right.
it. So, and it's a mix. You go out to see movies. Sometimes you'll get them. They've been around, and you can rent them at home. Other times you have to beg publicists for screeners, whatever the case may be. So what I have found weird about this year is I have not been to a movie theater in a long time. Well, since COVID, so over a year.
Right.
And then on top of that, I have found it weirdly easier to get access to all of the films that are nominated, which
yeah.
is strange, but yet true. And I don't know what to make of it. I don't really like that option of watching everything at home. It's not as much fun.
Although I will say it's not as much fun, but more people, it does, again, democratizes the process.
Yes.
Because I think this year more people, thanks to Netflix, thanks to On Demand, have seen more of the movies.
That's right. And
beyond the Academy. And I think we also have to acknowledge that the Academy itself is changing, that in the past 6 years they have made a massive effort to bring in new blood, younger people, people of diverse backgrounds. And so the old ways of picking what's going to be the winner has also changed because the composition of the Academy has changed.
So the idea of picking a winner this year is really hard because we don't normally, there's all these weird campaigns and people are putting all kinds of money up and saying, and all of that, I guess, is still happening, but to a lesser degree, because again, it's still hard to see everything and to know where it is, and it's odd. So, and it's different than it used to be. So that you have to train people on how to do it as well.
Right.
So is there such a thing this year as a sure bet, as a clear-cut winner?
Yeah, I think there are some sure bets in the whole frame of things. I think Chloe Zhao, as best director, the director of Nomadland, is pretty clearly going to, you know, if you want to do your Oscar picks, that one seems pretty clear to me. What doesn't seem clear a little bit is how it's going to get spread out. So people have seen Nomadland. They've seen Trial of the Chicago 7. You know, they've seen, I don't even know if they've seen Mank, which in a non-COVID year might have risen higher, even though it has the most nominations.
Yes.
When it comes to wins, I'm feeling like it's going to be a low number.
I agree with you. It's also, it's a quirky film. Some great performances, but it is quirky.
It's quirky. There's a number of things that put it out of favor, and I can argue this. I'm not beholden to anything, but it's out of sync in that it's old Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's white men, largely. Largely, not entirely. And there are some scenes in that movie that even though you can say, well, it was sexist then, but it's not now, there are some scenes in that movie where I was pretty icked out.
Yeah.
That doesn't, on the other hand, it doesn't diminish the performances, which are masterful, the direction, which is masterful, and all of the incredible technical feats of putting that film together. It just seems out of time to me, out of sync with the current time.
So let's talk about Nomadland for a moment, because this film to me just hit every box. I loved it. I love the performance. I love the story. I love the idea that there were non-actors in it. I just, everything about it, I loved. And other than it's been a while since I first saw it, and I had to go back and watch it again just to sort of remember how much I enjoyed it. It is, it's a really terrific film, and if there is such a thing as a sure bet, you mentioned her for the director, but maybe even Best Picture?
Yeah, I think that there's two top contenders for Best Picture, and Nomadland is one of them. The other is The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Yeah.
And the reason that I won't discount Trial of the Chicago 7 is because if you take a ballot where people are picking all their favorites and prioritizing among them, I think that there are some people who don't like Nomadland. But there aren't really, I mean, Trial of the Chicago 7 kind of everybody loves.
Yeah.
Whether they love it more, I think more people can embrace it.
So this gets... No, I was just going to say, this gets to something that you were talking about of how people decide that they're going to spread the love. So if you don't pick Trial of the Chicago 7, really your only other opportunity is to pick Sacha Baron Cohen in that movie, and then you're going up against Judas and the Black Messiah and
Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of this funny thing where you're trying to balance things out. There will be years where there's a sweep. This doesn't feel like a sweep year. And again, Sacha Baron Cohen, it seems like he was going to... I had him at Best Supporting Actor for a really long time. Now he seems to have slipped to second place behind Daniel. So
now, and Daniel is, that's a starring role. I mean,
that's a starring role. Mm-hmm.
And he's nominated for supporting actor with his fellow castmate. And you think, oh, well, yeah, that doesn't make much sense. Do you agree with...
It doesn't make much sense, but there's room for him there to be at the top.
Yes.
And I think if he was in the best actor category, I really think this is going to be Chadwick Boseman. I just feel like not only was his performance the heart and soul of Ma Rainey, and even in a way that Viola Davis's wasn't, but this is in memoriam. This is the Heath Ledger Award. This is, you know, recognizing what he also could have done if he had survived.
It is interesting because that film, how do you feel about Viola Davis as best actress?
I had trouble with that movie. It seemed like a filmed play to me.
Yes.
And George Wolfe, the excellent director, I just felt kind of put, I just felt put off by it. I just felt, yes, Ma Rainey might have been unattractive, was gay, all of these things, but it seemed like Viola Davis is somewhat acting in a different movie. Like, there she is all sweaty in all these scenes, her makeup running, and everybody else on set is dry as can be. Like, it didn't really come alive for me.
I agree with that. It is in some cases painful to watch of the self-destruction of that whole group. It brings to mind also what I find a similar film is Billie Holiday, the United States versus Billie Holiday,
right.
and Andra Day. And as much as I wanted to love that film, I really couldn't get around the fact that it was really tragic.
Right. And also that she is absolutely wonderful, and the movie is a mess.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
A complete wasted opportunity. So I'm interested in whether, I mean, it's a great thing that Andra Day made it into the top five for best actress. I don't think she's going to win. It's that category is kind of wacky. The best actress with Carey Mulligan, Viola Davis, Frances McDormand, Andra Day, and Vanessa Kirby. I feel like if Frances had not won for Three Billboards, she would kind of be the lock. But since she just won, I'm having trouble with it. Right now, I think that Carey Mulligan is going to win. And she's kind of riding the promising young woman train. She was on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
You know, she's really doing it. Viola Davis, maybe people are going to be split about whether it was a good or bad Viola Davis performance. Andra Day is hampered by the fact that the movie is a mess. And then there's Vanessa Kirby. It's an honor to be nominated. And she was in a movie, Pieces of a Woman, where she gave a fantastic, powerhouse, scary performance. And the whole movie was kind of in the first act.
Yes. And again, just treachery to watch, I think, especially that first scene, the extended scene,
yeah,
of the botched home birth. And then you add Shia LaBeouf to the picture and you think to yourself, yeah, what were they doing? You know, and
you think to yourself.
Yeah. And it's
what
it's
a strange world it is.
It's really hard to watch. And so that brings us to you mentioned best actor of Chadwick Boseman. I just want to go talk for a second with our Oscarologist, Thelma Adams, who is our guest this morning, and we are thrilled that she is here. I want to talk about...
And I am thrilled to be here.
I always love having you here. Sound of Metal, I want to talk about. Here's a film I saw early. I loved it. I thought, wow, this thing, you know, I hope this really gains momentum. And then it did.
And it has.
And it's got nominations, and so I have three thoughts on this. First of all, I love this film, and if I was voting with just what I enjoyed the most, that's the film I would vote for. Two is that in a normal year where you don't have starring roles and starring performances in the best supporting actor category, Paul Racy would have it, right? Isn't he the quintessential best supporting actor? I mean, that's a great performance that he would normally like totally take that away. And finally, it's a really interesting film about the deaf world, about addiction, about coming back, and it has a lot of positive and powerful things to say.
And that is why it is nominated. In the eight nominees. because it was that good that it kind of powered through.
So what
it
do you,
powered through the predictable movies.
So what do you think it ends? Does it end up with anything?
Does it? Yeah, it's. I think it's going to end up, and this is not going to make you happy necessarily, but I think it's going to end up with best sound.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's, at least it's a movie about sound. So
it's a movie about sound.
Yeah.
I think it'll get best sound, and then it becomes an Oscar-winning movie.
Right.
You know.
It's like Baby Driver. Yeah. It's so much depends on the sound. Yes.
So much depends on the sound, but as it in a normal year, and we'll go, and I want to go back to this. In a normal year, you and I have talked so many times. There's a weaning process that happens. It begins at Cannes when a lot of these movies come out, which
right.
This year Cannes didn't happen, and then it continues through Telluride, Venice, particularly Toronto, and then the fall festivals. So if a movie seems like Oscar bait but isn't, it gets kicked out during that process. And it's, I think that would have been the end of some of these movies. But what the other thing it does is it'll take a movie like Sound of Metal and push it up and forward. And so we didn't have that whole machinery, how the sausage is made,
right?
To sort through these movies.
So let's talk for a moment about The Father. I want to talk about Minari and I want to talk about The Father, but let's begin with The Father. Father is up for Best Picture. It is also, of course, up for Best Actor with Anthony Hopkins and Anna Olivia Coleman in Supporting Actress. And so how does that end up, do you think?
Gosh, how does that end up? It's nominated.
Yep. Best screenplay too.
I would even say that there were a lot of movies about Alzheimer's. We can discuss them, but like Viggo Mortensen's Falling, or even the TV show with Glenda Jackson. I think it was called Looking for Elizabeth. Something close to that. It was the opening film for the 50th anniversary of Masterpiece. Which honestly, I thought that was, even though it's TV, was kind of better than The Father. But you cannot knock. The Father is very formally interesting. It does take a play and open it out in the way that so many of these other films haven't. And, Hopkins is fantastic in it, although I loved him in The Two Popes.
Oh, I did too.
I thought those two performances, he and Jonathan Pryce.
Yes.
That was really, if you want to talk about an actual snub, they were snubbed. They were so good. Those were such challenging roles. I feel like this is an easy get for Hopkins. I mean, a nomination. I don't think he'll win because I think Bozeman is going to win. But I have him as second as a contender.
So, do you agree? And by God, you don't have to. But do you agree that maybe the most contentious of all of these categories is actress in a supporting role?
Well, that is such a fascinating category. I have the mother from Minari, and can you pronounce her name?
Yo Jung Yun, I believe. But I could be wrong. Yes.
I have her as coming up and winning. I have Olivia Colman second. Glenn Close, my God, Hillbilly Elegy. I know that people like this movie.
Oh, I don't know why. Yeah.
I thought it was a hot mess from the beginning. One of the most surprising to me nominations is Maria Bakalova. Not that she wasn't wonderful in that movie. Yes, they embarrassed Giuliani. Thank you very much. I'm hugely politically appreciative of what that movie did at the moment it came out.
Yeah.
But I don't get this. Do you understand this one?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think it was to basically say thank you for when we needed it, giving us a moment of saying, oh, look, somebody finally got this guy. I can't think of any other reason. It's a great, it was entertaining, but it was also awkward and odd and, I don't know.
As an acting performance, I got to say, I don't know. And I also, you know, Amanda Seyfried, for a long time I thought she was in first place. Now I have her at the bottom because I think she was wonderful as Marion Davies, and she's an actress who's done all, you know, she's done musicals. She's played the cute young ingenue. I liked her in that. I could have gone there.
Absolutely.
But I do think it's going to be the star from Minari. Olivia Colman could upset Glenn Close. It's no longer even an honor just to be nominated. you got to have a great film and a great performance this point.
And not just, she was the best thing in it, which she was, but that's not saying a lot.
That is not saying a lot. What else do you have on our plate?
Well, I have. So, did we nail down Best Picture? Did you give me the Thelma Adams of what?
I'm kind of. This is what I'm calling it right now, and I might shift, but I am saying Trial of the Chicago 7 is going to win, and Nomadland is coming in second.
Mm.
I could be. You know what? A toss of a coin.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
It could be Nomadland sweep.
And here again, in old times. You know, 3 years ago, that would be, you would look at a Trial of the Chicago 7 and say, oh, that was a movie that came out at the beginning of the year. It doesn't have as good of a chance as the movie that came out around
right.
the holidays. So that's interesting, too.
And also, I would say about Trial of the Chicago 7, you know, it's Aaron Sorkin, that it's somewhat indistinguishable from a TV movie.
Yeah.
You know, Nomadland is a film. And that may somewhat work against it in terms of watching it at home, whereas Trial of the Chicago 7 is closer to TV than a theatrical experience, so it works very well when you watch it at home.
That's a great point. Are there any categories, as we wrap up on this Oscar Eve here, is there any category or any nomination or anything that falls outside of what we've been talking about that you're excited about, a film that people should watch? What is it?
Oh, yeah. I am super excited about the Best Foreign Language Film, which I hope is going to be another round.
What a great movie. What a great movie.
What the heck is Mads Mikkelsen not in the Best Actor category? He's fantastic. And the fact that Thomas Vinterberg got a Best Director nomination, which was a surprise, shows how hot that movie is.
And it's universal. And I'm going to try to give a quick summary of what this movie's about. But it's a bunch of guys who are teaching in public school, and they go to one of the guys' 40th birthday party, and they start talking about this concept, which is that you're born with a blood alcohol level lower than it should be to enjoy life to its fullest. So they decide to take on this very scholarly approach, because they're going to write it down and keep track of it, and to get drunk and day drink
that becomes evening drink that becomes breakfast drink that becomes
and it what's wonderful about it is that it is, there are moments that shine for the people, there are tragic, horrible moments. I mean, it does all of the things that you would think it could do, and you end up with a weirdly satisfying ending, because it looks to the future of not only this character, but of the kids they're teaching too, which is really fascinating and lovely.
And it's not judgmental.
No.
I think, you know, if we could make one suggestion of something that you could go back and look at, people should go back. The films of Thomas Vinterberg are fantastic, humanistic, and have strong performances. You know, The Hunt, also with Mads Mikkelsen. just, you know, they really are, to me, moving, smart, original. So that's my one thing that I think is going to happen, and that I'm super hoping will happen.
Well, I always love watching the documentary features and the international films, because you never know what's going to happen, and some of them are amazing, and some of them are just are odd and interesting, and you wonder, well, are they going to really win? But it's a great, they're two really incredible categories this year, as they often are in the past. I will say I always get resentful because I watch everything. And this year, for some strange reason, and maybe because you're in the industry, Thelma, you can tell me how in the name of God, Love and Monsters got nominated in a category at all.
Which one?
Love and Monsters. It was, what's the kid's name? Dylan O'Brien? It's just a stupid movie, and it's silly. It's nothing that you would ever watch in a billion years, and yet I had to watch it because it's nominated for visual effects.
There's always that. I would say the other interest, you know, I have no idea how or why in that case. Neither do you. I think it's also kind of funny that in the documentary feature, which is all of those movies are fantastic, my octopus teacher became a huge hit and found its way into what is often a very serious category.
This is a movie, and feel free to argue my point here, Thelma, but this is a movie where a man sits at a table and talks about talking to an octopus for 90 minutes. Now, the visuals of the underwater photography are incredible.
Incredible.
But all it is this guy talking about his relationship with the octopus. And there is a point where you say to yourself, wow, that was only 90 minutes long, because it seemed a lot longer.
I feel like there is a point where I say he's talking very lovingly about this octopus.
Oh, very loving.
And his wife and son are completely neglected. And so what I loved is the counterpoint between these beautiful images of this octopus and how neurotic and this family actually is, and how out of touch the filmmaker is with the humans around him, which made it to me kind of delightful.
I thought at the very beginning he says, I basically gave up having a relationship with my son so I could investigate this octopus. And I just thought, oh, well, I mean, that's not what he really means. No, that's what he really means.
No, that's what he really means.
And I will say there was a haunting image in that movie, though. There's a moment where the octopus is asleep. And I thought, oh, my God, that is beautiful, of watching a sleeping octopus. Like, that's cool. That was neat. And then I got over it.
Well, I loved Collective. It's a fantastic time. The Mole Agent, Crip Camp. It's a very strong category.
It is. Yeah. And some really good stuff. And again, they're all available mostly. So you can go out and see them, whether on Hulu or Amazon or Netflix. They're pretty easy to find, which is terrific. Thelma Adams, it is always a great pleasure to have you on the program. I love talking movies with you. There's nobody better to do it with. The Academy Awards can be seen this Sunday on ABC. And Thelma, it's always great to have you here. I so appreciate your time, as always.
Joe, thank you very much. I love talking to WAMC, my local public radio, and to you, who sees more movies than I do.
Well, I doubt that. But Thelma, many thanks, and I look forward to talking to you soon. Be well.
Bye. My pleasure.
Again, the Academy Awards on Sunday. Thelma Adams is our guest. You can listen to this again or find it online, wamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.